In this video, Mauro Bellino, a distinguished scholar and author who translated official Vatican-approved interlinear Bibles for Rome's St. Paul Press, draws on his extensive knowledge of ancient languages and biblical texts to offer a radically different understanding of the Elohim, not as a singular God, but as a collective of powerful beings described as operating within the physical world. Delving into the Book of Enoch, Mauro reveals accounts of the Nephilim, mysterious beings born from the union of the 200 so-called angels, or sons of the Elohim, and human females, events said to have caused profound disruption in early human history. These beings, known as the Watchers, are described as imparting forbidden knowledge to humanity, including the workings of the solar system, incantations, and magic. Enoch, presented as a mediator figure who is said to travel back and forth with the Elohim, shuttling between Earth and their abode above, observing celestial order and carrying messages between realms. Could these accounts of ascent, instruction, and movement through the sky, framed in ancient language as divine phenomena, represent humanity's earliest encounters with a technologically advanced, non-human presence, challenging our conventional understanding of ancient history and the beings who influenced it?
Good morning. Today I would like to talk to you a little about the Book of Enoch, focusing on a theme we have not discussed before, which is part of the so-called apocryphal literature. The Book of Enoch, which is actually the Pentateuch of Enoch, made up of five books, which are the Book of Watchers, the Book of Giants, then replaced by the Book of Parables, the Book of Astronomy, the Book of Dreams, and the Epistle of Enoch. So, we will examine them. Today I would like to deal with a theme taken from the Book of the Watchers, which is interesting because it allows us to draw parallels with the Bible, and also considerations on the meaning of individual words that are important, extremely important. In the Genesis of the official Bible, the so-called original sin is described, which, as we have already said and amply demonstrated, does not exist. So there is no act committed by Eve and then by Adam that brought evil into the world. There, another story is told. A story that then continues with the descent of the Bene Elohim, that is, the sons of the Elohim. I remind you that Elohim is a plural term, indicating a plurality of flesh and blood individuals, who are always translated with the term Elohim, but it is almost always translated in the singular as God, because the Bible must be the bearer of monotheism. In reality, it is not. So, these Bene Elohim descend, these sons of the Elohim, unite with the daughters of men and generate children, which means that these children of the Elohim are individuals of flesh and blood because they are able to have sexual relations with the descendants of the Adamic group and to produce children. Therefore, they are also genetically compatible. This is a very, very important concept. Then the Bible makes a statement there and says, in that time, that is, in the time in which this hybridization took place, let's call it that openly, this hybridization between the two species, on Earth there were giants, and also after. And Genesis says these giants are the heroes of antiquity. Now, this is a sentence that seems to be inserted almost meaninglessly in the context of the logical discourse of the story that is being told. And in reality, many scholars say that it is a sort of condensation of a longer and more detailed story that is found precisely in the Book of Enoch. What happens is that after this hybridization, a contamination is born, which seems to be the origin of all the evils that afflict not only man, but also the earth. And that is where the Elohim intervene. The Bible tells us that Yahweh establishes that, from that moment on, the age of man will be 120 years. Before that, we know the patriarchs lived up to 900, 800, even 700 years. This was because they still carried within them a more significant part of the DNA of the Elohim. That component is gradually lost because hybridizations no longer occur, and it becomes more and more diluted in the genetic heritage of humankind. As a result, the lifespan of man naturally decreases. So, this intolerable evil is generated on Earth. An intolerable evil generated also by the giants. And from evil comes the need for salvation. Now, to simplify, in the Jewish religious culture, there was a, let's say, a school of thought that believed that salvation could come as a free gift from God regardless of man's behavior. But it is a school of thought that has been lost over time. Instead, the other school of thought has remained, according to which there is the intervention of God. But man must do his part. That is, man must perform acts of justice, must essentially respect the commandments. Just think, for example, of the speech that Moses makes in chapter 30 of Deuteronomy, where he calls his people to the duties deriving from the pact established with Yahweh, one of the Elohim, that is, the governor of the people of Israel. I said before that the Book of Enoch is made up of five books. The first is the Book of the Watchers. By watchers, we mean those who observe, the guardians. Also considered are the angels who in fact have the task of watching, the task of carrying messages, the task of controlling. They are guardians and therefore have all these functions. In short, they are defined as the watchers, a term that precisely includes all these tasks that these characters had. And the Book of the Watchers formulates a hypothesis on the origin of evil on Earth. Instead of directly attributing the origin of evil to man, it essentially says that the origin of evil derives from those 200 angels who rebelled, who came down to Earth. And this is an important concept, because the concept of descending and ascending is constantly repeated in the Bible too. We think every time Yahweh has to descend to hear things, he has to descend to personally ascertain things he has heard. And therefore, there is nothing more material, nothing more concrete than actions of this kind. Therefore, nothing spiritual. And the same thing appears here in the Book of Enoch. So these watchers essentially carry out two evil actions, which are those that give rise to evil in the world from which man can feel free. That is, essentially evil in the world would have come from entities traditionally considered spiritual. This might seem unacceptable, but in reality, we know that angels, the so-called Malachim of the Bible, were individuals of flesh and blood. And therefore, it is absolutely normal that they had all the passions, tensions, desires, and defects of men, despite being technologically much more powerful, despite being much more advanced from the point of view of knowledge. But from the point of view of fundamental needs and fundamental desires, they were also like men. And what evil did they commit? So, The first was to unite with human women. And here the Book of Enoch tells us that from these unions, from these hybridizations, the giants came, which is something the Bible does not say. I said previously that the Bible says the giants were on earth at that time, but it was a sentence that seems almost like an interpolation. Here instead, it finds its logical explanation, whereas there it seems to be almost senseless. Not only that, after having created the giants, these angels teach women knowledge. This is an unforgivable sin for the species of the Elohim, this civilization far superior to the human one, superior from the technological point of view, superior from the point of view of knowledge, superior from the point of view of ability. Not necessarily superior from the ethical point of view, absolutely. They were very similar to us, and we, unfortunately, are very similar to them. Exactly as the Bible says, that the Elohim made man in their image and likeness. And in fact, unfortunately, we are perhaps even too similar to our creators. And it is precisely from these considerations that we can understand what has always happened in the world. Not only today, because wars are certainly not a modern phenomenon. Wars have always existed since humanity existed. So, what happens? It happens that these angels are guilty of evil on earth. The book then identifies a need, that of having a mediator between those who are entangled in this evil, or even guilty of it, like the angels, and the great chief who is called the Most High. In the Bible, he is called Elion, which, as we know, simply means the one who is above. It is not a superlative. It is the one who is above, the one who commands. And this mediator is Enoch. Enoch, who is cited in the Bible as one of the important patriarchs. And it is said that Enoch literally went back and forth with the Elohim. Back and forth. Also because the verb used in the form hitpael means exactly this. To go back and forth, that is, to travel between the earth and the seat of these sons of heaven, as they are called in the Book of Enoch. Sons of heaven, who had to have some place in heaven, and where the Most High was also found. So much so that in the Book of Enoch, the seat of the Most High is also spoken of. Now, to think that a spiritual, transcendent, omniscient, omnipotent God has a seat is ridiculous. And yet, it is spoken of quite calmly. Just as in the Bible, the more material aspects of Yahweh are spoken of calmly, one of the Elohim, the one who had the task of governing Jacob's family. It is striking that in this activity carried out by Enoch, as mediator between those who have done evil and those who continue to do evil because they are children of evil, that is, both giants and men, and God, Enoch chuddles, that is, he goes back and forth. And this is confirmed, and I repeat this because it is important, by both the Bible and the Book of Enoch. The verb in Hebrew is ithalek, which is the hitpoil form of the verb halach, of the root halach. And in that form, it actually means to go back and forth, that is exactly to shuttle. So, we are faced with entities, let's call them that, absolutely material that need to move, as Yahweh did, to see, to listen, to realize, to better understand the things that were happening. The Bible tells us this very often, and therefore, this is a concept that we must keep well in mind. Sorry for the various movements you see, but my syndrome does not give me any peace, and so I have to force myself, as usual, to try to keep one part of me under control while the other is the one speaking to you. So please bear that in mind. And now, let's go and read just to get into the merits. I tell you right away that I read the literal translation made by an official translator published by UTET, who declared the literalness of his translation from the Gyaz language, the ancient Ethiopian language. So, with all the problems that this entails, because Gyaz is a complex language, just a minimal change in a word, a sort of quotation mark, a dot to completely change the meaning of a word. However, since this is a super expert in translating the Gyaz language, we take his translation so we don't make a mistake. And, in part one of the Book of the Watchers, Enoch makes a summary that is very interesting. In this going back and forth, he says, I have investigated all the operations that are done in the sky, how the stars do not change their path in the sky, how each one rises and sets, each one arranged in its own time and without transgressing its own order. Observe the earth and pay attention to what is done on it, from the beginning to the end, how every visible action of the Lord does not change. Observe the dry season and the rainy season. As the whole earth is full of water during the rainy season, and cloud and dew and rain rest on it. So Enoch from above sees a whole series of things that will then be explained better in the Book of Astronomy that we will see later. For now, let's stay in the Book of the Watchers. The Book of the Watchers then takes up the biblical account of the giants and tells it in greater detail. And it came to pass that the sons of men increased, and in those days there were born to them daughters, beautiful in appearance, and the angels, the sons of heaven. I remember that in cultures all over the earth, they speak of celestial beings called sons of the stars. So, here too we are faced with the same situation. Individuals who have arrived from heaven. Then these sons of heaven saw them, and fell in love with them, and said among themselves, Come, let us choose for ourselves wives from the sons of men, and beget children for ourselves. And Semeasa, who was their leader, said to them, I fear that perhaps you do not want this to be done, and that I alone will pay the price for this great sin. In the sense that hybridization between the two species absolutely should not have occurred. But evidently these Elohim in their travels lacked the feminine aspect. Being made of flesh and blood, they had needs exactly like ours. And they all answered him and said, We all swear and promise that we will not withdraw from this purpose, and that we will put it into practice. Then they all swore together and promised one another, and they were 200 in all. And they went down to Ardis, that is, on the summit of Mount Armon, which they called Mount Armon because they had sworn on it and had exchanged a binding promise. We will return to Ardis now, because it is very interesting. And these are the names of their leaders, Semeasa, and then he names another 18, who were therefore evidently intermediate leaders of these 200 so-called watchers, who, we know, were beings belonging to a well-defined military hierarchy that had a summit here defined as the Most High. In Gyaz, unfortunately I can't tell you, In the Bible, however, I can tell you that he was called Elion, and that Elion means the one who is above. That is, it is not a superlative. It simply means the one who is above. What is said about artists is interesting. Here the note says that the Ethiopian reading is not acceptable. According to Sincellus, Sincellus was a monk who became Sincellus, that is, secretary of the Patriarch of Constantinople. We are between the 8th and 9th centuries AD, and he really wrote a monumental history of humanity. He says that in artis is actually wrong. That is, the Ethiopian reading is wrong, but it means at the time of Yared. Now, Yared is a patriarch named in the Bible. He is named twice. In Genesis 4, he is named as the son of Enoch. In Genesis 5, he is named as the father of Enoch. Now, continuing to read the book of Enoch, you understand that Yared was the son of Enoch. But the interesting thing is that Yared derives from the verb Yarad, which means to descend. And we know that often in the names of important people, and the Bible in the various genealogies only names the firstborn, that is, the one who was the head of the whole family clan. And therefore in Yared, the memory of a descent could have been fixed. And this would correspond exactly without the need for flights of fancy. And then, all this happened before the events related to the descent of the angels took place, or perhaps during. In the sense that if Enoch called his son Yared, it may be that he wanted to fix in the name of his son the moment of this great important descent of these angels who arrived from some part of the sky. If I wanted to use one of the expressions of one of the pioneers of studies in this field, Erich von Daniken, I would say of a station that was present in the sky. Because to say in the skies means to say nothing. That is, the skies do not have a definition. Instead, these came from very specific parts, and even the Most High had his seat in the skies. This is what the Book of Enoch says. And when I speak of abode, I am referring to what is written in Part 1, where it says, I spoke about the elect, and spoke for them, with the Holy and Great One, who will come out of his abode and is ruler of the world. I say there he will go to Mount Sinai. So, in reality, it is clearly said that the Most High has an abode from which he comes out to go to Mount Sinai. I would say that it cannot be clearer than that, as I often say about the Bible. Let's move on. Then he names the 18 leaders and then says, and they took wives for themselves, and each chose one for himself. And they began to go to them, and they united with them, and taught them incantations and magic, and showed them the cutting of plants and roots. That is, in reality, they began to transmit science. True science, because we know, and it is very verifiable among peoples who still today live almost as in the Stone Age, how what is not known, that is, a strange event, an extraordinary event, is considered as an enchantment, as magic. I mean, if I light a lighter in front of one of them, I immediately become the god of fire, because clearly in an instant, I produce something that, to them, instead, requires a lot of effort. And they became pregnant and gave birth to giants whose stature was 3,000 cubits. Here, the same scholar does not put a consideration on the cubit, on the unit of measurement used by the author. And this could very well be an oversight. Because 3,000 cubits would mean, using the standard cubit as we know it, about 135 meters. and frankly, that seems a little too high. However, in the transcriptions from Ga'ez, from Greek to Ga'ez, and then from Ga'ez to Amharic, we know that the scribes who worked on these texts very often did not know what they were dealing with, and therefore raised no questions, and errors are therefore very possible. The giants ate all the fruit of the labor of men, and the giants turned against them and began to eat men. And they began to sin against birds, animals, reptiles, and fish, and to eat one another's flesh and drink their blood. We know that in the Bible it was forbidden, but it was expressly forbidden to drink the blood of animals. On the subject of drinking the blood of men, discussions among the rabbis continued for centuries because the Bible does not directly prohibit it. Especially among the French rabbis and the German rabbis of the Middle Ages, the conclusion was reached that the prohibition of drinking the blood of animals is a divine prescription, while the prohibition of drinking human blood is a rabbinical prescription, and therefore obviously much less binding. Let's move on. What did these angels do? Azazel taught men to make swords, knives, shields, breastplates, and showed them what would happen after them, and as a result of their way of acting. In reality, here too there would be another error. The meaning is not as a result of their way of acting, but rather that he taught metals and how to work them. So, we see that Azazel teaches how to make swords, armor. And so, let's not be surprised if we live constantly here and there in the world, in a state of war. Because after all, they are the ones who made us and made us like this. And if the first things that are taught are these, and we understand well that the consequences are almost inevitable. After that, he also taught how to make bracelets, ornaments, dye, and beautify the eyelashes. Then he explained the stones, more than all the precious and select stones, all the dyes, and he also showed him the change of the world. Here it is interesting because in the Amharic translation, the change of the world is accompanied by a parenthesis that explains what it means. Because otherwise the change of the world could lend itself to speculations of any kind. Of any kind. In reality, it is a very simple and almost ridiculous thing. Here the Amharic explanation says, the change of the world would be to make man the mule by crossing the donkey and the mare. That is, in reality, these beings taught very practical things that obviously could represent to those who saw them at that time a sort of change of the world. Seeing a donkey and a mare mate and produce a mule, that is, an animal particularly suited to work because it is particularly robust, obviously represented a great change. So, you always have to be careful, and that is why this literal translation, combined with the Amharic one, and which also takes into account all the Greek fragments of the Ethiopian Book of Enoch, helps us understand that, in reality, we are talking about something extremely concrete. And there was great wickedness and much fornication. Also because we have seen that Azazel taught women to make themselves very attractive. After that, Amazarak instructed all the enchanters and root cutters. Armaros taught the solution of the spells. Barakel instructed the astrologers. Kobabel taught the signs of the stars. Temel taught astrology. And Ezradel taught the course of the moon. And at that point, however, the corruption of the human race in the meantime While on the one hand it acquired knowledge, the corruption continued more and more serious, more and more profound, more and more unacceptable. And then men made here, he says, the voice to the sky. And again, this sky must have a point where this voice arrives, because it is not enough to start screaming for someone to hear. And if they are spiritual beings, there is no need to scream, obviously. On the contrary, there is the need to close oneself in to communicate with them. Instead, their voice reached the sky. Then Michael, Gabriel, Suriele, and Uriel looked down from heaven. Be careful. They look down from heaven. More and more, I am reminded of the statements of Erich von Däniken, who speaks of stations that were stationed in the sky, where these people lived, and from which they could control what was happening on earth. They looked down from heaven and saw much blood flowing on the earth, and all the iniquity that was being done on the earth. And the men said to these archangels, leaders of hosts of armies, bring our case before the Most High. And they said to their Lord, for you are the Lord of the Lord God of gods. Here again we have the statement that the gods were many, and that there was a leader, that Elion to whom I referred before. For the throne of your glory is everlasting, and your name is holy. By the way, I remember reading earlier, not all the sons of men will perish because of the secret of all that the watchful angels have destroyed and taught their children. I remember that Eusebius of Caesarea, in his evangelical preparation, when he speaks of the universal flood, says that when Noah sees that his ark finally arrives on dry land, on one of the heights of Urartu, that is, of that great mountain range. So, not necessarily on Ararat, but on one of the heights that make up that mountain range. When he arrived, he found other people already there. His family was not the only one who had been saved. And the curious thing is that his family worked hard to convince the others to come down, because the others were afraid, and therefore did not want to come down, because they still feared the effects of this universal flood. Then, after Gabriel, the Lord said to Michael, announce to Semyasa and the others, who together with him joined with women to corrupt themselves with them in all their impunity, when all their children will pierce each other, and when they will see the death of their loved ones. In essence, he must imprison them too. And then destroy all the souls of pleasure and the children of the vigilant angels, because they have done violence to men. So, in reality, we are faced with a story that tells us about individuals of flesh and blood. Individuals that, I would say, undoubtedly, or let's pretend, let's keep the declared method. They had a seat in the heavens that was also the seat of the Most High, and it was a seat from which they could observe what was happening on earth. They could communicate with men, and they could intervene. It continually says they came down, and there would be no need to say they came down when speaking of spiritual entities, obviously. Also because it says that even the Most High will come out of his seat. And therefore it means that the Most High had a seat. It says that Enoch went back and forth. And in the Bible, in the verbal form that I told you, it says that Enoch went back and forth with the Elohim. And I would say that there is no more perfect correspondence that could be found between the two expressions. Here, the translator, when he narrates, makes the comment of this. In short of the activity of Enoch, he actually uses the expression, he shuttled, and we all know what shuttle means. Going back and forth. Now, if we calmly reason about what we have read, We put it in parallel with what we have been saying about the Bible since 2010. We see how humanity has actually come into contact with a superior civilization. With a technically superior civilization, technologically superior, with a superior civilization from the point of view of knowledge that has intervened in man. And here in the Book of Enoch, he also clearly tells us that he taught men things. Just as, for example, in the Sumerian texts, it is said that they taught agriculture. So we have parallels that essentially all tell us the same things. And in order not to see them, you really have to close your eyes. So, it is necessary that we read, and then we will continue to read, the Book of Enoch. We read these texts as abandoning that theological interpretation that instead makes us essentially a flock that is guided by shepherds, who consider themselves the only ones legitimated to read and explain these texts in the light of the doctrines that they have elaborated at the table. Bye, thank you, and see you next time.